on episode 87 of the InsurTech Geek Podcast, talking about cyber insurance pains and gains with Gordon Malin from Alpha Secure. The InsurTech Geek Podcast, powered by JB Knowledge, is all about technology that's transforming and disrupting the insurance world. We'll be interviewing guests and doing deep dives into specific tech we see changing the industry. We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech, so enjoy the ride and geek out. And here we are. It's, as we record this, Friday, April 29th, 2022, not 2020. We're still in the 2020 time warp bubble. It's in the time-space bubble. Along the time warp continuum, that means that it actually has been 2 years since COVID hit, and here we are. I'm your lovely co-host James Benham, InsurTech Geek in College Station, Texas, home of Texas A&M. That's where I am. But joining us from beautiful Connecticut, otherwise known as Connecticut, I mean my main man here, Gordon Malin. From Alpha Secure. What's going on, Gordon?
Thanks, Shane. Pleasure to be here. Good. Just enjoying a nice sunny spring day in Connecticut.
Yes. Yeah, like actual spring. Like the
actual spring.
Spring has arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah, the snow has melted. The creeks are
flowers.
Full. The flowers are blooming. The blue birds are singing. The butterflies are flying.
Life is good.
Life is good, you know?
Yeah,
like you
nice.
You survived another winter.
Yeah, we did. Cold one. Too bad. But
I don't know how you guys do it. I don't know how you do it. I mean, then again, we deal with, 70 days of 107 plus.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, it's hot and humid. But it's okay. It's all good. Everything's a trade-off. Because even the places with really great weather all the time, they have crazy high tax rates that are just as painful. So it's like you can't find that perfect thing. You know,
no.
It's either too hot or too...
doesn't exist.
The porridge is either too hot or too cold or, you know, whatever it is. But we're not going to talk about the weather. We're going to talk about cyber. We're going to talk about insurance. You are an insurance geek.
Yeah.
I'll give you InsurTech Geek since you're running a digital MSA.
Newly converted InsurTech Geek, but a long-time insurance geek.
Yeah, a long-time insurance geek. And that's good. So we have a lot to talk about in cyber because there's a lot to talk about.
You need some of those, yeah.
You need a lot of insurance geeks around, 100%. Let's talk about you before we actually jump into the topic of cyber. You are founder and chief operating officer at Alpha Secure. That's just for the listeners, if they want to pull their website up, ELPHA, not Alpha, Alpha, like Alphabet, ELPHA Secure. And we're going to talk about that in a second. Let's go back into time. You're from New England? You from the area?
Yeah, New York area. Born and raised outside the city. Kind of been here the whole time.
Like New Jersey or Connecticut? You're from Connecticut?
Right in the middle, Westchester.
Westchester.
Connecticut now. Maine for a few years for college.
That's where I fly in. I fly into Westchester County Airport.
Nice airport.
I'll be there a week from today. I'll be in Westchester.
A little easier and a little more pleasant than LaGuardia.
Everything's more pleasant than LaGuardia. Like, seriously, it's all more pleasant than LaGuardia. So you're from the area. You go to Bates College. A little chilly up there in Bates College.
Sure was.
What did you dream of doing, and what did you get? What did you study to do?
Economics. So major in economics, and kind of always kind of dreamed, but was very much focused on getting into the kind of finance side of things, you know, go back to the big city, you know, and eventually found my way after a few years of consulting, working for a very small hedge fund. And that was kind of how my whole insurance career got started. So it was beginning of 2005, got hired by a small fund that was focused on banks. And I was going to be the fourth banks analyst that they hired. And I was all excited, going to go learn banks. So, you know, thought it was pretty cool, you know, going working for a small hedge fund. And about a month into my tenure there, they decided to broaden their scope and go beyond just banks and go broader into financial services. And they you know quickly looked at what are the next largest asset classes, and there's insurance. And they're like, all right, who wants to cover insurance? And I'm sitting there looking around. I'm like, well, I'll do it. The only one, new guy on the bank side. I was like, I'm gonna carve out my own domain here. So that was it. That was been 100% insurance ever since that day. So started teaching myself insurance, loss ratios, like just everything.
Like the basics,
The
like basics.
basics. Oh yeah, the basics. Like what's an expense ratio? What's a loss ratio? Capital charges? AM who? Who? What's this organization? That is basically the de facto regulator. And so you'll recall 2005. I'm kind of about 6 months into figuring it out,
Wait,
and
I love, well, hold on, hold on. You and I are like the same age. So
yeah.
I love how you glossed over the fact that you endured the dot-com collapse,
Oh yeah.
9/11 in New York. The economic collapse of the United States that was after that. Like, you just skip right over all of that. I mean, that was a wild time to be in financial services and to be an analyst in New York City.
Yeah, no, it sure was. It sure was. Yeah, we try to forget about some of that,
Oh
but
my
no, it was.
gosh. I
You
mean,
never. It's. It was.
I was up on the World Trade Center August 23rd, 2001, visiting some friends of mine that lived in Battery Park City, about a block away, and was there visiting. Went up to the towers. August 23rd, man. Like, I stayed for a week, had a great time, hung out with my buddies who were all financial analysts. I mean, I started my company April 16th of 2001, and we had no idea 9/11 was
No
going to
idea.
just, we had no idea what was going to happen to the economy and everything else. It was just nutty, nutty.
No,
So
it sure was.
you navigated
And
New
yeah, and
York.
I lived, I mean, I lived not, I wasn't allowed kind of, lived kind of downtown at that point, and it was like the world just kind of came to an end. It was terrible. I was like a year out of school. I had no idea what was going on, like no idea, life, and you're just, and everything just changed. Everything just changed. And insurance, and I didn't realize it at the time, but that was like obviously a devastating moment and terrible thing. But like the insurance, like that was a seminal moment for the industry as well. And followed a few years later by Katrina, Rita, Wilma, and then we got another financial crisis like 3 years after that. I mean, it was a rough decade.
We've been very fortunate, and I think there's a lot of late 20 somethings, early 30 somethings who have literally never seen a recession and don't understand what's going on right now, really. And it's interesting to be on the other side of the coin and to be kind of the
Sure is.
salty dog older guy who's actually been through two really bad downturns. And I even remember 87, 91, like, because I was a kid, but my dad taught, he was a business owner. He talked all about what was going on. And it's, we've been do
It
something
was,
for a while.
yeah.
So
And
you, go ahead.
go ahead. I was gonna say, no, I was at Citigroup in 2000, basically during the crisis, the second crisis, and I
Jeez.
was. You didn't know if your key card was going to work that morning showing up, and it was, I mean, what happened with Lehman? It was a wild, it was a terrible time.
So you started covering insurance, and you actually stayed over in investment management. You were a portfolio manager for years and years and
I
years.
was, yeah. Yeah, so started off as an analyst, and that was it. So it was really, Katrina hit, Rita hit, Wilma hit, and balance sheet. It's an amazing thing when you go into insurance, you're starting to learn about it, and what you quickly learn about is there's these things called cycles, and they usually last, I don't know, 20 years, and the majority of it sucks. They're soft markets, 15, 17 years long, you'll endure one, and then something happens, and it all changes. And that was KRW, right? With companies, balance sheets got destroyed, and then new balance sheets got created. You had a whole new coming class of markets. Bermuda had been raised a bunch of capital, and this was 4 years, right after 5 years, right after 9/11, and the first kind of the class of 01 came in. So you have a whole bunch of new companies coming around, and it was fascinating. Sidecars, ILS, and we'll come back to capital markets and ILS, but that began to play its role in the insurance space. And kind of being able to kind of watch that from the beginning of it was, I mean, that's what hooked me. I've always been a global insurance analyst or portfolio manager, but it's really property and casualty that's always kept me engaged. That's kind of where my love is. Life insurance, I know a lot of good people in life insurance. That's not for me. I'm a P&C guy.
Yeah, it's interesting how the industry is bifurcated, even though there's a lot of companies that write both P&C and health, life, disability. There's plenty of them. I mean, they're carrying risk. They collect premium and pay out claims, and whether it's a death or a health event or a dental event or there are companies that spread the line, but it's for me, longtime PNC guy, I am doing work building technology and health, life, dental, supplemental health, not primary health. It's been a lot because there's already so much to learn. I've been building software in PNC and working with PNC carriers, brokers, TPAs for 18 years, and I still don't feel like I know everything I need to know.
No, you learn stuff every
I
day.
know, I'm like, where was this for the last 18 years? I mean, it's like, it's a bizarre thing because I felt like I've worked in other industries and I feel like you can get your hands around something in about 5 years. So, Malcolm Gladwell's old 10,000 hour rule, and I don't feel like that applies to insurance. Like, there's just it's too there. There's so many little niches that are like you can spend an entire career in this niche, like PEOs. You can just do PEOs, right? And like you take a standard PNC insurance person and introduce them to professional employment organizations, and
What?
their brain will come unhinged.
No, well, that was it with PNC for me. Like early days, but I realized like start covering the space, and I go to all these conferences, and what I realized was there was like 10 of us who were dedicated to the insurance space. Most people that cover insurance were like they covered all financials, they're doing banks, asset managers, and like insurance was this redheaded stepchild. So they were like kind of told they had to look at insurance, but no one wanted to look at insurance. So there's only like 10 or 12 other people that are actually dedicated to covering the space. Like I could compete there. That's great. I mean, you think about it, you go back those days, like tech companies, hundreds and hundreds of buy side analysts, focused on covering XYZ company. How many people were actually dedicated and focused on, AIG or Zurich? Like a dozen, right? Like it's like, what's your business model? Like you could be the smartest guy in the room when there's no one else in the room. So I just started dug in, and that was it, And it was realized there was so much to learn here, but it was easy to stay ahead of other people who were only spending 10% of their time focused on it.
Yeah. Well, you in 2018, just 4 short years ago, you founded Mountain Road Advisors. You were founder and
I did.
portfolio manager at Mountain Road Advisors. What did y'all do there at Mountain Road?
Yeah, so it was a global insurance fund, long short public equity. So, same thing I've been doing for the last, 18 years, 10 of it as a portfolio manager, just running long short public equity. So every public company and public insurance company on a global basis, over and from, again, Zurich, AIG, down to the Bermudans, or to AXIS, Validus once upon a time before it got, all the brokers, those are all my domain. So, and I ran a portfolio, at $200 million, again, dedicated purely to the space, right? So I'd spend my day job was, it'd be anything from meeting with a C-suite, executive, kind of going through the quarterly numbers or talking about the strategy, all the way down to line underwriters, brokers, what's going on in the D&O domain. That was it. And then you take all that knowledge and you figure out who's gonna win and who's gonna lose. And through that lens, watched the insurtech evolution, watched the evolution of the cyber insurance product, and kind of during my time on the road, met my co-founder Pritam Dutta, who was at his time getting his PhD in machine learning and cybersecurity. I'm like, all right, he's your kind of like quintessential like entrepreneur, right? And I'm like, all right, cyber insurance, a brilliant guy. And we put our heads together, and with my kind of domain knowledge of what the cyber product looked like and where I thought it was ultimately headed, and his knowledge of actually knowing how to build what we needed to build, out of that came Alpha.
What did you just close down Mountain Road?
I did.
Yeah, and so you obviously really to shut down something like that's going that well. I mean, you've got to really believe there's a real opportunity here.
I certainly do.
Yeah.
No, it is. I think it's one of the biggest opportunities the insurance space has seen in decades.
Yeah. So, First off, tell me why is the company named Alpha Secure, ELPHA Secure?
Well, we like the elephant. There's lots of reasons there. And Alpha itself, so Alpha with an A, you know, that's something that is, you know, it's Alpha is important in anything. It's important when you think about loss ratios, right? Like we're very focused on loss ratios, right? So how do you generate a good business? Well, have Alpha in your loss ratio, right? Have a better loss ratio than everyone else. From my kind of prior career, purely focus on generating alpha, right? That's what, as an investor, that's what you do. So there was lots of things, lots of reasons why alpha worked. We like the elephant, the mind, you know, there was, you know, it keeps, it's a, it was a, it was a, basically it worked.
So is Alpha Secure a tech company or an insurance company?
It's a great question.
Or is that a trick question?
No, it's, you know, it's we're a tech company, but we're truly leveraging the insurance apparatus to deliver our tech. And so what do I mean by that? So we're an MGA, right? And you obviously know what an MGA is. So an MGA, you are, you know, you're completely, you know, you leverage other people's balance sheets, right? Like we don't have a balance sheet. We don't want a balance sheet, but you need to utilize balance sheets because you are generating risk. You're engineering the risk, or at least we are. And then we're placing it on other people's balance sheets, right? So we need to work very much within the confines of the traditional insurance apparatus because we work with balance sheets. We have phenomenal balance sheet partners, and they're very important to us. But really what we're doing is we're actually distributing to small businesses, which is our focus, tech software that solves for their cyber needs in this environment, right? And we're combining that with insurance, cyber insurance, also another critical tool that they need. And we're leveraging, you know, the traditional insurance distribution apparatus, brokers, to be able to access that small business, you know, at the beginning of their cyber journey, right? So, and a lot of people are there right now. Yeah. A lot of people are at the beginning of their cyber journey.
Yeah, but you're, you know, so you said some things that are kind of like trigger hot words right now in insurance. So first off, you said, you're working through brokers, so you're not pursuing direct to consumer. You're not pursuing direct to the end business. You're only selling through distribution partners.
We are today. Yeah. So
why
cyber...
why not? Like you know, insurtech.
Great question. Yeah.
Insurtech space. It's super hot right now to try and go direct to the end buyer. Whether that buyer's a consumer or a business owner. What was that line from Zoolander where he said that, he's so hot. Remember that? He's so hot right now. It's Hans.
It is.
Hans is so hot right now. It's so hot right now to go direct. Why work through traditional distribution?
It is. Because when you kind of like, you spend a lot of time focused on distribution as an insurance analyst, right? And what we realize is, and if direct for small commercial, simple BOP type policies works. When you get towards specialty types products, it's just the demand isn't in the direct channel yet. It will be, like it definitely will be. And for cyber, just because it's kind of a digital type of, you know, you're already in that mindset, I think it might move more quickly into the direct line than or direct channel versus other lines of business. But we're just getting to a point where you know, small business, simple small business policies are going direct. I mean, it took years to get auto like this to go direct, right? It just, I think the culture here it's just taking a little bit longer than we'd all had hoped to go direct. And then you look at what's happened before, and there has been cyber insurance MGAs who have tried to go direct,
yep.
And there's just no appetite. The appetite isn't there.
They've had a hard time scaling.
And most of them have tried there, have pivoted and gone
yep.
back. In fact, cyber, I mean, you know, you got direct, then you got retail, then you have wholesale. Cyber is just coming out of the wholesale distribution channel and moving into retail. And so once you get, you know, and it's a natural evolution, you know, you get the retail, once they actually begin to sell it, that's when it'll move into into direct. That's the kind of the natural evolution.
But you have done what others have done, and you have provided a suite of technology tools to go along with
yes.
insurance. It's required. You have to use your technology?
Correct.
If you don't, you get non-renewed.
Correct. And we build some of the coverages to kind of tie the compliance to basically ensure that the software is used.
Yeah, which we've now seen in multiple other lines, right?
Yeah.
So there are auto insurance policies mm-hmm. that are only valid if you're on tracking either through the app or through the OBD2 port in the car. You know, there are home insurance policies that are tying IoT in, so you have to have some level of home monitoring.
Yep.
There's, I mean, we can walk through the list of lines that are connecting, but this one, because it's a digital product, is probably the best suited product to tie to a technology offering.
It really is. No, it really is. And the way we kind of think about it is it was only natural that cyber was going to go there, right? Because
interesting that it didn't for like 20 years? I mean,
well, you know why?
I've had cyber a long time.
Oh yeah, of course you have, because you're a smart buyer, and you probably paid for years. You paid 10% less for a decade if you were buying cyber that long ago,
oh, yeah.
right? And what happened was it was like always going to be this massive like pie that was going to grow and be 10, 20, 30 billion of premium. But God, 5 years ago, it was barely 1.5. Like, it was still a pretty small line of business, but all the carriers knew it was going to be big. And they did what we do in a soft cycle. They compete for market share and drive down the price and immediately throw out all sense of underwriting. And so controls were just not necessary, you know, until ransomware happens and all of a sudden loss ratios explode. Margins go terrible, and the underwriters and C-suites go, what? Stop. And this happened. It was literally, you could kind of pinpoint the bottom of the soft market. It was the third week of January a year ago, and we're like 14 months in. And it was, sadly, it was like the last line of business to turn. Like, almost every other line of business in PNC turned before cyber did. It was really kind of ransomware off the back of the work from home movement that really just really changed it. And now you can't get a policy at all unless you have a ton of controls in place, right? That's just, they said, it moved really quickly, like no backups, no MFA, no insurance. And now it's soon going to be no EDR and no insurance. Like, and so the demand on small businesses to have controls in place to even access the insurance market is getting harder and harder by the day. So
yeah, that's an understatement of the century.
Have you tried to fill out an RSA, the ransomware supplemental application?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I had to fill it out for renewal. It's a lot. It's a lot. I mean, Gordon, I told you before the show, I'm a little sore about this because my premium's just tripled. And I have been a responsible long-term buyer of cyber.
Yeah.
And it's tough to see your premiums go up literally 3x. It's tough. At the same time.
But admittedly, you were paying way too little a year ago.
Who wants to admit that? Who wants to admit that? In particular, when your E&O is bundled with your cyber because you're a tech company, so they really need to. It's a really interesting how soft the market was for that long. And boy, frequency and severity just both popped through the roof, didn't they?
So, you know, it's interesting. So a lot of people point to ransomware as like the culprit was really kind of causing your triple and whatnot. And it was kind of what got things moving. But what really has defined the hard market and will continue to is the aggregation issue of cyber. And so, like, you know, you get to kind of the year end of 2020 and the attritional loss ratios are exploding. Like, the industry is not probably quite at triple digits, but we were in a bad place. But it was, then you have SolarWinds in December, then you have Exchange, the Microsoft Exchange vulnerability in January. And you had these two back-to-back systemic risks where people, like, SolarWinds was like 18,000 organizations.
It was everywhere. I was
everywhere.
And I was so happy to not be a SolarWinds user. But
to
I mean,
that was the moment. That was like the panic moment where people were like, oh my God, we haven't. So ransomware, that's an attritional loss ratio issue, right? That wasn't CAT. That wasn't systemic. It was just a massive step function in the attritional loss ratio, which, by the way, we probably haven't seen that much of a step function in attritional loss ratios in any line of business in forever. But then you have that. And then on top of that, people realize, oh my God, I have CAT exposure in cyber that I never realized. I have 70% of my book is exposed to SolarWinds. Like, let's say that wasn't, you know, a vulnerability used for espionage, but used for actually ransomware. All of a sudden you go, oh my God, this is, my book can literally explode on that. And that is what people realize, the aggregation issue in cyber was, it will make property CAT aggregation look like child's play. Just the limits exposed on the industry's balance sheet weren't large enough where people were that concerned about it. And now they're waking up to it. And the demand is now for limit is growing so extraordinarily at such a, you know, at such a rate that the industry itself does not have the ability to solve for the capacity. And that is why we're in this like hard market that started as a classic response to a loss ratio change, but then is only going to be expanded on because people realize the aggregation issue is so severe.
But what it's a like, great time to have a cyber MGA. I mean,
timing is good.
Really good to have a big hard market come around about halfway, a year and a half into your company. So, all right, what software are you writing and building yourself, and what are you just using from other people? I don't need to know what languages, but just tell me what it is you say you do here, to quote Office Space.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So you know, everything we build is proprietary, and we have some brilliant engineers. And so essentially what we did is we looked at the loss ratio for guidance. Kind of a weird thing to build a tech company on, right? But you go, what are driving losses for insurance, right? Because our business model is predicated on insurance carriers who are focused on loss ratios. Amazing concept. And so what was driving losses? Ransomware, right? So what was driving ransomware losses, which are about 2/3 of the loss content, was all was basically ransomware. So how do you solve for ransomware? Well, RDP, open RDP ports, was the attack vector that drove over 60% of all ransomware incidents. So build MFA to close your RDP port. Like, it's not crazy, but you know, small businesses, they don't even know what an RDP port is. Yeah, and they go try to price out Okta, or you're like, what the cost of that? And the software was not built for like sub 1000 endpoints. So we built it.
So let's explain what this is to the average listener out here that might not know what that means. RDP, remote desktop protocol. That's when you like log into a machine remotely and see the screen of the remote machine on your machine. Back in the day, and I mean way back in the day, there was a time when servers didn't have firewalls in front of them. Okay, I'm just going to lay this out. There was a time in the early, like when Gordon and I got our career starts, that people just like plugged servers into the internet, and there was nothing protecting them. And then, and so you could just like, you would just go do what's called a port scan on IP address range, and you would just find all these open ports of all these machines that were listening on the internet. And then you would start connecting to them, kind of like the 1983 movie War Games, where he just dialed random numbers until he found one that picked up and he could connect, right? Matthew Broderick, great movie. If you haven't watched it, you must go watch it, because it just keeps replaying itself over and over again. So you have all this exposure with all these people who have all these old servers that are just plugged into the internet, and they have like, you know, pass through of all these ports. And they're just exposed to the internet and open. They're not closed. And MFA, by the way, when he says that's multi-factor authentication, which is pretty much a requirement now on everything because it's so effective at shutting down attacks. It's a very, very – shutting down ports and requiring multi-factor authentication is incredibly effective at securing systems.
All right, everyone, if you're listening, use MFA.
Yes,
but yeah, MFA. No, that's exactly right. And so we closed down a lot of the frequency by just putting MFA in front of RDP access. And then backups, right? Having an offsite segmented backup that you could access and restore from if, God forbid, you do get ransomed is critical, right? Because then you don't need to pay the ransom. Your business interruption costs go down and your data restoration costs go down. Those three insurance agreements were, again, like, comprised 2/3 of the loss content. So you kind of start with what's driving losses. And, you know, if you think about small businesses, they have They don't have any of that, right? So it's like you're kind of like putting seatbelts in the car, right? And they don't need enterprise grade software. They can afford enterprise grade software, never mind install it, maintain it, configure it. So what we set out to do was build something that was very simple, very kind of make a small business be able to, can actually have hygiene, like build a proper security posture so they could kind of survive and thrive in this environment, but actually not inundate them with so much of a change of user workflow, kind of consume, all their all the bandwidth on all their bandwidth, all their RAM, et cetera, like, because they just don't have the ability to work in that type of environment. So we built a very lightweight solution. It's an endpoint agent that sits there and gives you all the tools you need that you would otherwise in this environment have to go procure on your own and spend an immense amount of money to then have the luxury of going back to pay for the premium. So we include all those within the price of the premium. So it's an incredible value proposition for a small business who doesn't have $30,000 to spend on EDR, backup, MFA, and an insurance policy. You get it all from us for
It's all
a
bundled.
fraction of that.
Yeah, it's all bundled, right?
Yeah. So, and you think about, so the agent today is going to their insurer with a quote from pick your carrier. This quote, subjectivity is quote, you got to install MFA across your organization, right? Our subjectivity is you got to install our software. Our software that we're giving you is free. It's within the price of the premium. The MFA software that you have to install to bind with everyone else, you got to go pay money for that, right? So inherently, you're pushing a bunch of a cost burden onto the insured.
You're putting a much higher cost burden than just the premium. What if they already have something like Azure B2C, like they've got MFA and single sign-on, and they've got all this stuff there? Like,
Yeah,
what if your
so
software gets in the way?
there's two levels of that. There's guys that have all that stuff and are great risks. That they're not for us. They're going to someone who is someone else. We're really geared to that person who may have one tool, two tools, and our software works hand in hand. If you already have something, very easy. We're very adaptable. Like it's super simple to run side by side.
Oh, cool.
But most of these businesses have nothing, or if they have something, they're going, oh, I could stop paying for this because you're giving me for essentially within my premium costs. Like, so there's a lot of that happens.
Yeah, that's awesome. This is a lot to take on,
It
right?
is.
It's a lot to take on to build all the cybersecurity software and to run a cyber MGA well, right? So I'm assuming because you're the insurance guy that you spend more of your time running the insurance operations and your technical co-founder is really focusing on the cybersecurity division.
That's correct.
Yeah. So how's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. Yeah, we launched a few weeks ago, so
And
we're in market and
where are you writing business?
we're writing business. Well, in the U.S., all 50 states, we have a number of agents who are onboarded, quoting policies, binding policies. It's good. We've really found our sweet spot to be that kind of that small business who is like. A lot of professional services organizations, it's five lawyers and they're like, they know they need to buy cyber insurance, but they literally don't have a single control in place. Maybe they have antivirus on their computer. Like that's where we win. That's where we're gonna win. It's, kind of meet them at the beginning of their cyber journey and then capture them for life. You give them good product, good protection, both insurance as well as software. That's a great relationship. Right, and you're aligned, right? The alignment is what I think is really exciting because you're aligned with your insured. You want to protect them, keep them from getting ransomed or any other type of incident. You're aligned with your capacity partners, right? Because they care about their loss ratios, right? And so you have this kind of like pro-cyclical effect at the front end where those insureds that are compliant, that respond, will send an alert. You have out of date software. There's a bunch of critical security patches in this. Like, if they're quick to update, that's wonderful. That might positively inform the renewal. If they never respond to the alert, that's a bad risk, right? Price them up and out.
Sure.
They're gonna That's eventually a claim waiting to happen. Put them on someone else's book. So you have this kind of positive selection that continues to grow as the portfolio firms
Yeah.
and the data is critical too, right? We're on the other side of the firewall helping them, but the data is very valuable from an underwriting perspective. it's telemetry data, right?
Yeah,
Think
but
about your snapshot. You're for Progressive. Like it's
yeah. Well, you can sell them other insurance though too, because once you're on the other side of their firewall, you can say. So, are you bundling E&O with your cyber?
not yet, not yet, but on the roadmap.
Yeah, like that would be the next
Yeah,
logical,
it sure is.
right?
It
Like
sure is.
is selling E&O, and then you could even dive into some more interesting insurance. Like what once you have a lot of data on what's going on in the organization, it seems to me like there would be a few other lines that would be very nice add-ons.
I mean, think
Like
about it. Like, do you
a
think there's a
BOP.
pause? Do you think there's a positive correlation with how seriously they take their cyber controls and with every other liability, EPL, E&O,
Absolutely.
workers' comp, property? I mean,
E&O, D&O. I mean, like we I mean there's a I you know, is
Yeah,
it core
don't we gotta walk before we can run.
No,
So before
I
but
know.
yeah,
I know, but it's but it's
it
but it's an
is
it's it, you're always looking for causation, not just
absolutely.
correlation, right? Like causality, not just correlation.
Yes.
And so I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and I'm always looking for the guy in the red shirt, because in Star Trek, the guy in the red shirt always dies. And that's correlation. Like wearing the red shirt doesn't cause death, but it just so happens that Gene Roddenberry wrote it that whenever a guy's wearing a red shirt in the original series, he's going to get whacked. And so I always say, like, show me the guy in the red shirt, like if you can, I know there's a lot of heat that auto and home guys take over collecting credit scores, right? There's a lot of discussion around
Of
credit
course.
scores being positively correlated to risk outcomes on residential and auto. I mean, they use it for a reason.
Always, yeah.
Yeah, they use it for a reason, right? I would think this would be another one of those really big ones, because just controls in general. This is the guy who's I my before I started this company, I was an intern. I was a controls intern at
Yeah. Okay,
Pricewaterhouse.
there you go. Yeah. Yeah,
like
you understand
it,
controls.
I spent a little time in controls. I was paid to break into things, and it was interesting to see if they had controls in one place, they often had them everywhere, right?
Exactly.
And so that made them a better risk in general.
Exactly.
And
Exactly.
so I like the angle. I like the angle a lot. And I've seen other cyber MGAs that are doing cyber liability. Like I've seen this. But I haven't seen them where they're building the entire suite of cyber software. That's I think probably because it's such a big lift to build that
It
much
is a
suite.
big lift. And we're focused on small and kind of medium-sized business for that, right? We're
Yeah.
not going to serve large, right? Large, it's a different product. Large, you have a CISO who's got a team and a
Yeah,
budget,
yeah,
and
yeah.
they procure their own software, right? And that's what they're there for. But in small,
It's
they can't.
manageable. It's manageable. What about
Yeah.
like intrusion detection and prevention systems? Like, are you building a physical piece of hardware, or is everything you're doing software?
Software.
So you're not putting like back in the day, which was a Wednesday, we would buy an IDS system, and it was actually a pizza box that you'd throw into your server cabinet, and all the traffic would be copied to that pizza box. So are you doing intrusion detection and prevention with like a virtual machine? I know, I promised I wouldn't get too technical. I'm sorry.
No, what we're doing. So what we have is we basically have a our telemetry tool. Think of it as an EDR. So the kind of the endpoint detection and response.
Yeah.
We have all that functionality. So to be able to look for anomalous behavior, to be
Yeah.
able to look for
So you're doing you're doing you're
see.
you're doing packet inspection on the traffic?
Absolutely.
Okay. Man, that is a lot of code to write. Yeah.
We got some brilliant guys doing it.
So where is everybody located? Are y'all all over the country, all over the world? Where's the team?
Yeah, we're all over. We have kind of a, I'd say there's a core group around the in the tri-state area around New York, but we have a fair bit of tech talent up in Canada as well. So kind of U.S. and Canada, but all over. It's you kind of start a company in a virtual world.
It turns out they're good at making more than just maple syrup in Canada.
Oh, they're phenomenal! Yeah,
I love Canada.
yeah,
Like I love visiting Canada. I
yeah,
miss visiting Canada.
yeah.
So
It's a good
it's
place.
a good place, man. It's a good place. Good, talented people. They know how to endure winter, like you guys.
They do.
They've got their they're hardy. They're hardy. They all go to California and Florida for the wintertime. That's how they do it. Every time I go to Southern Florida, Southern California, the wintertime is filled with Canadians. I'm like, you guys say you love your country, but you don't love it 5 months a year. So, all right, last question, and we're done.
Yes, sir.
What's next?
So, what is next is continuing to, well, obviously build the business and evolve the business. But I think what's really fascinating about the cyber insurance space is kind of what I was alluding to earlier, is just the supply demand, right? The demand is incredible. The amount of capacity on the PNC balance sheet to serve cyber is finite, and we're pretty much there. So that's why you talk about this perpetual hard market. Like, and the question to me and what we want to solve is how do you fill that gap, right? You got demand going like this, and you have supply that's massively underperforming it. And the only way to do that is via the capital markets. And so we've had this, and this is why you kind of go back to KRW, you learn a lot about how capital markets came in as that release valve to be able to supply capacity to a market that really needed limit. It needed property limit and cat limit. And that is exactly what's happening in cyber. So what we're really kind of focused on beyond just kind of the building of the technology is how do we actually bring that capacity to our insureds to be able to kind of offer them a sustainable product, but also systemic risk cover, right? Like there's, you know, potential movement in the industry where you might not be able to buy systemic risk. You could buy kind of an attritional policy that just protects you. But if the same risk that hits you hits 10 others, it might be excluded because that is a very expensive risk to cover if AWS goes. I mean, we could go through all the hypotheticals, and there's plenty of phenomenal, you know, cyber models that do a good job of trying to figure out single points of failure and the impact. But the impact is large.
Yeah.
And the only way to really solve it is to diversify cyber risk on more than just balance sheets that maintain PNC and life liabilities.
Okay.
So that's where this is all headed. So we're very focused on being able to kind of tap into that at the front end of the value chain, right? You know, you don't want it going out the back door through a reinsurance broker to the ILS market. You want to be able to do it at the front, facilitate that risk transfer. And that's really exciting from our perspective.
Is penetration testing part of the offering here?
It is not.
So you're not externally pen testing your clients?
We do not.
Okay. I was curious because that's one of those things that's often required or mandated. It depends on the sector. So enough about that celebrity doppelganger and voppelganger. And you're going to say, James, what is a voppelganger? That is a voice doppelganger. I think you must be second. Well, see, I've been podcasting for 7 years now, and I've heard a lot of voices, some that are entirely fabricated in my head and some that are actually in my headset. But you are a doppel and voppelganger with one of my favorite characters of all time. This is a guy named Jim Halpert from The Office. He had some famous lines.
Don't you mean Jack Ryan?
So, well, I'm going to say you do look more like his Jack Ryan manifestation. You do look like he's got the beard and you got the hair. And you know. But I'm just going to say for all the people who are listening, who are going to watch, I'm going to have Jim Greenlee, our podcast producer, I'm going to have him do a side-by-side with Gordon and a image of Jack Ryan, so we're gonna look at.
You're a good man, James. You could have gone anywhere with this. But
We're gonna do a side by side with John Krasinski and Gordon Malin, because I mean it is creepy. It's been freaking me out. Some favorite Jim
Shirts on, please.
Shirts on for the. So the Jim Halpert quotes are aplenty. I love Jim. I love Jim Halpert. One of my favorite ones. I'm going to leave you with this. My favorite quote from Jim Halpert. I'm about to do something very bold in this job that I've never done before. Try. it's been a pleasure talking with you again.
Yeah, real pleasure.
Alpha Secure, ELPHASecure.com. Thanks for joining us today, and thanks for being on the InsureTech Geek podcast.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And everybody out there in listener land, thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. This has been the InsureTech Geek podcast. powered by JB Knowledge. That's jbknowledge.com. It's all about transforming and disrupting the insurance world. I've been your host, James Benham. That's jamesbenham.com with co-host Rob Galbraith. That's endofinsurance.com. Big thanks to Jim Greenlee, our podcast producer, Kara Dalton-Alro, our creative producer. And thank you for joining us today. We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech. So enjoy the ride and geek out. See you next time.